firstly, I'd like to explain why the others haven't arrived back yet. It's because there obviously are funerals that will take place there are in Istanbul at the moment, and they'll be making their own decisions about when to travel back. But obviously, some of them knew the people who died relatively well, and they feel they want to be there for understandable reasons. I'm in my prison uniform because I've just sort of, you know, arrived straight from the airport. So the situation basically is the following. Over the last few days, the Israeli government have added piracy and an attack on a humanitarian aid boat in international waters and murder of civilians in international water to its list, its growing list of crimes against humanity. The figure of 9 dead that Israel's giving, I feel, is not accurate. There are many more missing, and so that figure, I believe, will rise. This mission was a peaceful mission. It was to deliver humanitarian aid to Gaza, which has been under an illegal siege and blockade for over 3.5 years. The people on this mission were aged between 1 and 89. There were 32 countries on the ship that I was on, the Mavi Marmara. There were other citizens of other countries on other boats in the flotilla. The people on the flotilla and on our boat included MPs, and yet our boat was attacked in international water by the Israeli authorities, by the Israeli military. We are hoping that the deaths, the horrific deaths of the people, will not be in vain. We're hoping that this will act as a wake-up call internationally, including to our own government, that the siege must end, siege on Gaza must end. As I said earlier, it's illegal, inhumane, and immoral. Israel has been used to acting with impunity and violating UN conventions, human rights, and international law. That situation has to change now. So if I just go into the situation that I experienced. On Sunday the 30th, we set off in the afternoon together. We'd assembled on boats together in international waters, obviously. We set off at 11 p.m. that night. Israeli naval boats were detected on the radar and then sighted subsequently. A decision had been made, was made to move move further it back into international waters to change the direction of the boat and move it in direction further from Israel. We started broadcasting from the deck. It was difficult because Israel was cutting our satellite signal. We managed to get some broadcasts out explaining that we were on a humanitarian mission, that the United Nations had called for ships to be sent to with humanitarian aid to break the blockade on Gaza. We were simply undertaking that goal. An emergency medical room was assembled, and we were all told to put life jackets on to prepare for any attack. At 2 a.m. I went to sleep. At around 10 past 4 a.m. I woke up, went up to the deck where I could see outside, and I saw boats, small dinghies, but bristling with guns and Israeli military, speeding towards the ship. Helicopters then appeared. Gas and sound bombs were used. And the reports from the Sydney Morning Herald were that at 4:20 a.m. they reported gunshots form ago on the Challenger, which is the boat behind us, transmitted this information. We then had the first passenger fatally injured. He was basically brought to the back of the deck. There were two open decks, there was one below and one above. He was brought to the back of the deck below. He was shot in the head. I saw him. He obviously was in a very bad way and he subsequently died. The captain announced that live ammunition was being used, therefore to stop resisting this act of piracy and to go downstairs and sit down. What then happened was that at 5:15 a.m. the broadcast, we started broadcasting over the channel for help to evacuate the critically injured for emergency medical assistance. We asked for the Israelis to stop the attacks. We were asking this in English. We are not resisting. Please help the injured. Instead of helping the injured, the saloon remained surrounded with soldiers, targeting individuals with laser sights. I could see the red of the laser sight sweeping over people's heads. We made two attempts to try and get the message across in a written form as well as through the many announcements over the tannoy. We wrote a sign in Hebrew saying SOS, need medical help, medical assistance, people are dying, urgent. Hanin Zubi, who's a Knesset member, an Israeli Knesset member, took that sign to the front, to the back of the boat where the soldiers were pointing at her. They ordered her to go back. The sign was then brought up again towards the back by a British citizen and she was told to go back again. It wasn't until 7 a.m. that the Israelis started allowing the first critically injured person out, and he was delivered into Israeli hands. An attempt was made to send a medic with each of the critically injured people. I thought that the medics were going to be going with the critically injured hospital. Instead, what happened was they were cuffed and they were put on the deck, and they were not able to accompany those critically injured people to hospital. Once the critically injured were removed and the dead bodies, I saw four dead bodies in the saloon that I was in, laid out on the floor. All passengers were moved out of the ship and onto the decks. As we were moved out, we were all cuffed with cable ties. All our phones and cameras were removed if we had them on our persons then. We were made to sit or kneel in lines on the decks. Obviously, the sun was quite strong, and I was aware that people started to get dehydrated. I had to request water to be allowed to be given to people in the upper deck where I was. We were then, after some hours, we were then moved down again to the saloons. Some of us were uncuffed, some of us were not. I personally was uncuffed, but I witnessed men being cuffed right up until when I left the boat, which is approximately between 10 and 10:30 p.m. We then processed at Ashdod, where people had tried to retain some evidence of Israel's crimes, using, for example, keeping their sort of camera cards and things like that. I personally put my SD card, my memory card for my camera, in my shoe. That was taken. I still haven't received that back. We were then taken to Beer Sheva prison. We were denied consular access. The consular representative told me that he'd gone to Ashdod and stayed there for quite some time on the Monday, but he was denied access to see us. He only managed to see us on the Tuesday afternoon, and he didn't manage to get round to see everybody. So there were British citizens who were not able to see their consular representative at all. I found out when I was on travelling on the plane back. I think probably I should stop there for any questions. I think the one thing I want to just make clear is that this is not this is simply an attempt by Israel, obviously, to prevent humanitarian aid getting to Gaza. We, along with all of the other groups that participated in that mission, are committed to continuing to pressurise the governments of the world to end the blockade on Gaza. It is illegal, it is immoral. 1.5 million people are under this blockade, and we will do, we will continue to challenge this blockade. We will continue to work and campaign to end the siege on Gaza.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hello there, Chris Layton from BBC News. You mentioned that when it was apparent that live ammunition was being used, there was an instruction to stop the resistance. Exactly what form did that resistance take? Because there's been reports that there were weapons on the boat that you perhaps wouldn't expect on a humanitarian vessel.
Okay. The boat, all of the passengers and all of the supplies of the boat would have had to go through the Turkish port authorities. Myself, I was scanned when I went through with, you know, body scanner, and my bags were scanned. Okay, there is no way that the arms could have been taken on board the boat. I am aware that that the Israelis are saying that knives were available. Yes, we had kitchen knives because we were on there for some days. We needed kitchen knives to eat. Okay, those are not weapons. I did not see any kitchen knives used at all. Well, I was while this was all taking place, the only time I saw kitchen knives was to use to eat food.
So, what form did the resistance take?
Can I just do you want to finish on that one?
Okay, I saw people trying to basically just standing there trying to stop the Israelis getting on the boat. What was happening was that the boat was being taken over in an act of piracy by the Israeli troops.
Okay, yeah.
Were you, Kylie Morris from Channel 4 News, were you aware of organisation though to stop the boarding of the boat? We've all seen pictures of, you know, apparently men with clubs or men with certainly some kinds of poles hitting commanders apparently being pushed off board or thrown to the ground.
I'm not aware of that. What I saw,
where were you when that was happening?
I was on the top deck. I was on the deck down from the top deck. No, sorry, I was on the top deck, but I didn't see clubs being used at all.
So what sort of resistance did you see?
I just saw people standing there shouting Allahu Akbar and things like that. That's what I saw.
Alison McKenzie, ITV. A lot of us are here because we have other British nationals we're interested in. Do you have a word about people you were captured and coming back later? How are they? What's the general mood, please?
People are, I mean, they need to speak for themselves, but I'm aware that some of them were staying with people who were then killed. So they would need to tell you how they felt themselves, really. But I mean, I think we can all imagine what it must be like for them. I personally was, when we went to prison, there was a woman there who had lost her husband, who was shot. And she was in prison along with the rest of us.
Thank you. Rob Booth from The Guardian. When did the shooting from the Israelis begin, as far as you saw?
I can't remember the exact time. What I know is the information that the Sydney Morning Herald gave of 4:20 a.m. That's when they said. But I can't remember exactly when the shooting began.
But what did you see? Because you talked about seeing.
I just saw. That was after the boat had been taken by the Israelis, and we were all sitting in the saloons. They surrounded the boat then with guns, and they were aiming them at passengers inside the inside the boat.
But not firing at that point.
They weren't firing at that point that I was aware of. They were simply aiming them. It was in a very aggressive manner. But there were bullets flying. I mean, it was a situation that, you know, bullets flying all over the place when I was on the top deck at that point. When I realised that there were bullets flying all over, then I took the decision to go downstairs.
Can I just ask, when you said there were bullets flying all over the place, was that prior to the commandos descending from helicopters?
I can't remember exactly what happened first, I'm afraid, but
okay.
Sarah, Amina Taylor from Press TV's The Big Story. How would you assess your treatment from the moment you were handcuffed to your deportation?
We were kidnapped. We were deprived of our liberty. We were deprived of our belongings. As you can see, I haven't got my belongings. I had some clothes that I was wearing when I was taken into. When I was arrested by the Israeli police, they announced we were arrested. And I have a few other belongings that I managed to get in with me. But other than that, people's bags are on the ship. We did see a lot of trashing of personal effects. And the situation is, as I said, basically people were illegally held against their will. They were taken to Israel from international waters. They were, for example, the British didn't have consular access for around 18 hours with the first British. Some people weren't allowed to make phone calls. I was able to make a phone call on the Tuesday evening. So in terms of treatment, in terms of our basic rights, they were completely and totally violated.
Sarah, Fareen Alan from Press TV. Most of the people who died seem to be Turkish. Was there a conscious decision made by the commander's flotilla or on that ship that the Turks would come forward and they would be the first line of defence? I'm not sure.
I have no idea about that, but what I can say is that there were the majority of people on the boat were Turkish. And I think the point that needs to be remembered is that this was an act of aggression on the boat. What happened was that the Israeli military were firing on us. We had no arms whatsoever. We were subject to live ammunition.
Hi Sarah, Sharon Thomas, London Tonight. How unlucky do you feel to be back here on home soil in London relatively unscathed?
Obviously, there were people who paid a very, very high price on the boat that I was on, that either died or lost loved ones. So I'm in a very fortunate situation. I think the other point that needs to be made is we never envisaged that we would face anything like this. We prepared for potentially the Israelis to attack the ship. That's the reason why people put on life jackets and things like that the night before. But we never envisaged they would be using live ammunition against civilians on a humanitarian aid mission.
Thank you.
Hi Sarah, Amy Khwaja at Mail Magazine. The Israeli government maintained that the aid flotilla was organised by Hamas. What do you have to say to that?
The aid flotilla had 32 different countries participating in it. The Israeli authorities lied to us systematically all the way through. They lied to the press, as far as I'm aware, because I was actually, you know, kidnapped by them. But as far as I'm aware, they were telling the press that we were in Israeli waters. There's obviously proof that I'm sure you're aware of that we were not. We were in international waters. So you know, you can judge for yourself whether or not you believe personally that story is accurate or not, but I can tell you that's completely false.
Hani Bishra, Al Jazeera Channel. Have you been asked to sign certain documents that you entered Israel illegally?
We were asked to sign documents before we left. I wasn't able to bring a copy of the document that I signed. We were asked to sign documents that did say that we were willing to be deported, and that we'd been informed of our rights. We were never informed of our rights, and I made that point clear in the document that I signed.
So you were forced to sign it?
I was concerned that I would not be able to leave the country if I didn't sign it.
Did all the participants sign these documents?
I can't tell you whether all of them did or not.
Okay. Thank you. Andrew Corey with the Associated Press. As she had said before, the Israeli government made questions with ties to Hamas. What can you tell us about the Free Gaza movement? And they had claimed that that had ties as well. It's a Turkish agent.
I can't speak on behalf of the Free Gaza movement. All I can speak on behalf of the PSC. And we're not affiliated to any political party, either here or in Palestine.
Okay, back.
What do you want the British government?
Could you say who you
are? Almost. What do you want the British government?
Okay. We want the British government, firstly, to take action, ensure basically that there is no future attacks on any humanitarian aid convoys or flotillas, to ensure that there is a search carried out for those who remain missing, to ensure that those people who have been detained illegally by Israel, remember we were in international waters when they kidnapped us, they are still detaining some people inside Israel, to ensure those people are released, and most importantly, to end siege on Gaza, and to ensure that Israel actually implements international law.
Were you ever in any position that you felt that you had to personally participate in this resistance? You had said that you were on top of it.
No, I was watching because I wanted to know what was happening. You know, I wanted to see what was happening so I could be a witness. I was aware that the Israelis had cut off satellite transmission. I was aware that we needed to have witnesses and testimony because, as I reported, what was happening was our cameras were being taken off us and we were not able to take them into prison with us. So I was very concerned that the evidence may not get out to the outside world. And so that's the reason why I felt I needed to observe what was going on.
Peter Jackson, BBC News Online. There's a report in one of the newspapers that you held a dying protester in your arms.
Yeah, that actually wasn't myself. That was another person that I was with at the time. There was a bit of confusion there. It wasn't actually me, but I did report back to my partner that I had seen that happening, but it was someone else who held her. Held him.
Alexandra Seville King, Correct Paper Magazine. You say it doesn't stop here. How will you carry on with this campaign and how will you be personally involved?
We haven't had the time yet to discuss with the other organisations, obviously, what to do. There's the matter of finding the missing, of burying the dead, which obviously takes precedence for many organisations that have lost people. But we need to get together and plan. We'll obviously tell the press as soon as we know what will be happening, but you can rest assured that we will be continuing to make every effort to break the blockade on Gaza using peaceful means to deliver humanitarian aid.
And Marcus Dyes, Jewish Chronicle, do you think that perhaps you and others from Britain may well have been exploited by those with links to extremist groups for their own aims?
There is nothing extremist about carrying out what the UN have asked us to do as states, which is to send humanitarian aid into Gaza. That is something that is a basic human trait in everybody to see where they're suffering to try and alleviate it. What we were doing was taking humanitarian aid there. We were taking concrete to try and build houses that have remained unbuilt since the attack on Gaza. We're taking some other medical equipment and other things. But it was all humanitarian aid.
Check it again.
I was wondering, was it worth it?
I think we'll have to wait and see. I'm hoping that it was worth it in the sense that it provides a wake-up call to the world. We cannot sit by and watch this continue. We cannot sit by and watch Israel violate international law for every day and violate the human rights of Palestinians. We feel that we have to do something to bring it to the world's attention and to get that humanitarian aid in. So I'm very much hoping that those people who died, their deaths will not be in vain, and that that this government and other governments will take notice and end the siege.
Okay, this gentleman here.
Ahmad Versi from Muslim News. You said quite a few people are missing. Do you know of which nationality?
I won't be able to give you that information. I'm afraid I don't know. That all of this is being collated because there's a passenger list. There's information from the Israeli authorities, obviously, but it's not possible to get that information, sorry.
I think we should see. I mean, we have never had any clear information from the Israelis about the number of dead, who they are, and so on. The only information we've got is the number 9 and 4 of them Turkish. We don't know what the nationalities of the others are. We don't know anything about the injured that are being held still in Israel, and so on. It's the Israelis who have this information, not us, and they are refusing to give it to anybody. I think that's really something that the press ought to be taking up with them. Sorry for intervening, but sorry.
Could you describe when the assault was at its height, the atmosphere, your feelings, and the sounds and sights that you were taking in?
To be honest, it felt a bit surreal because I couldn't quite believe that they were doing what they were doing. I think, at a time like that when there's live ammunition flying around you, none of us anticipated it, as I said. And so I think...
what could you hear? What was going on? What was it like?
I could hear, the sound of the bullets flying, and that was, that's the thing I remember, is the sound of the bullets flying. I'd hear the whir of the helicopter blades as people were dropped down onto the roof.
Do you still want to ask?
Jimmy Wimble, ITV News. I just wondered if you could explain for us how, obviously you had some indication that something was going to happen, you set up a medical room, but how much of a shock did it come as to, the amount of force that was used? I mean, you obviously did have some hint that something was coming.
Israel had attacked previous flotillas, previous boats that had tried to deliver humanitarian aid to Gaza, but they had never done anything like this in the past. I certainly had not anticipated something at all like this.
Did you have medics on board, right?
We did have medics on board. But you need medics on board if you're going to be at sea for a few days anyway. I mean, we didn't know how many days we were going to be on at sea. We didn't know what was going to happen. We had a woman who's pregnant. We had elderly people. As I said, we had a child that was around one year old. You need to make sure you provide, in those sort of circumstances, you have a responsibility to make sure they're safe.
I was wondering if you might be able to clarify. The Israelis say that 2 guns were taken off their Marines with the possible suggestion that they might have been used.
I saw nothing at all on that. I did not see any guns being taken off Israelis and used. What I saw were guns being used by the Israelis on unarmed civilians.
Oh, sorry, go on.
Did any of your colleagues or other people you're with, have they not told you anything about the kind of resistance that was put up, or whether or not they had seen anyone being thrown overboard or guns being taken off anybody? Have they not talked about it?
We had a situation where basically we were sitting, it was a terrifying experience because we were sitting down in the saloon, we were told not to talk by the Israelis. We were motioned not to talk. If we started talking, they would be like that, pointing the gun at you. So it was not, you're not talking about things like that then. When we were cuffed and went upstairs to sit in the sun, you know, we were not talking. We were then separated, the men and women were then separated when we went into the processing centre at Ashdod and sent to different ward, different blocks, prison blocks. So there hasn't really been sufficient time to pool any sort of experiences of what happened. Obviously people have got different experiences because they were in different places on the boat. That's all really.
The children that were in the flotilla, how were they treated?
There was one child.
How was the child treated?
I saw the child with us when we were in the saloon. There was no air conditioning in the saloon. It was very hot. The child was crying for a lot of time. His mother was trying to calm the child down, but obviously it was a very very difficult situation for any child to be in, and the mother was down with us, with the women trapped in the upper saloon. I can't remember exactly when she came down when she got off, but she was on for some hours.
Okay. The last question then was this lady here. Did you still want to ask?
Yes, please. You talk about the live ammunition. I think the Israelis also use some non-live ammunition. Do you know the difference or when they switched or what made you say it's live ammunition?
Because when you saw a bullet wound in, I saw a bullet wound in someone's head. It was very clear that was not. It was live. It was live ammunition. It was not a, as far as, I can't imagine how it could be anything but live ammunition. And I said before, my girl said that it was live ammunition that had been killed. I would that been used. I would find it very difficult, even if as the figures of 9 dead have come out. I mean, how you could kill 9 people with non-lethal ammunition, I find difficult to believe.
So there any things that we're sure injured today, British?
Sorry?
Any of the ones that you saw injured, were they British?
Not that I saw injured. I think the British consulate might have more details on the status of British citizens.